Welcome to the Multifamily Zone, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneur life looks like from the family perspective. Now, here are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro.
Hey everyone, this is Julia Barbaro, host of the Multifamily Zone podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro.
Julia, we're talking a little business today. I like that. It's not just spousal communication. It's not just relationships, but it's relationships within the workplace, which is very important. I love talking about core values as well, values-based decision-making. And right now in this environment, it's very difficult to find and retain excellent employees. And you want to create a culture. You want to create those core values. And I think this book is going to help the listeners with that, Julia.
Yes. Tell us about the guest and about the book you're talking about.
Dr. Paul White. He's a psychologist, speaker, and leadership trainer who makes work relationships work. Dr. White is the co-author of three books, including The Five Love Language, Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, written with Dr. Gary Chapman. He's author of number one best times best-selling author of The Five Love Languages. He recently authored The Vibrant Workplace. As a speaker and trainer, Dr. White has taught around the world, including North America, Europe, South America, Asia, and the Caribbean. Awesome. Without further ado, welcome to the show, Dr. White.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
First question I always like to ask is, you know, why did you write the book? What was the impetus for writing the book?
Yeah, so you might be interested to know, I grew up in the context of a family business outside of Kansas City and sort of lived through that process, some good, not so good, and wound up consulting with family-owned businesses around the country, dealing with the family issues that are intertwined, you know, struggles of working together, but largely business succession issues. And so, you know, there's sort of saying in the South, I lived in Atlanta for a while, you know, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And so you can make a business plan, but if it doesn't include the family and, you know, the family members don't feel like, you know, they're being treated fairly, it creates problems. So I was doing that. I was working with a organization in North Carolina, a construction company, and talking to the dad, the CEO, I said, you know, how's the transition plan going? He says, it's good. My son's stepping up. I think it's going to be fine. I walk across the hall, ask the son the same question. And he said, this is a disaster. It's never going to work. I can't ever please my dad. And I'm like, okay, I know this. I've been there. And so my wife and I were reading the five love languages at that time, probably the third time I'm slow learning that stuff. And I thought, you know, I wonder if this might work in work-based relationships. So I pursued Dr. Chapman for a year. Finally got in front of him and pitched the idea, and we developed an online assessment, which became our motivating by appreciation inventory that now we've been fortunate to have like 280,000 people take. And then I worked and built some training materials, low cost things for small organizations to be able to use. And then he and I wrote the book together, and there we go.
There's so many directions I can go.
Yeah,
right
my
now.
Mind is all over the place.
The first thing, because you're describing my family and all the small mom and pops out there. And we buy apartments. And when you're buying an apartment from a, you know, an owner who has 20 to 30 units, small little buildings, they want to give it to their children. Mm-hmm. Their children want nothing to do with it. And those are what we call mom and pops or motivated sellers. So when you're listening to this, you don't want to be a mom and pop motivated seller. You want to get into touch with Dr. White, read his book, and figure out how to create a great relationship with your children if they want to take the property over and if they don't. So,
You know, it's, I don't know if you know this, but my husband had a family owned restaurant for many, many years, and it was interesting. So I love to hear your story as well. I read a little bit in the book as well. It makes me laugh. And I know that other people out there are working with their parents or working with their children. This is the book that you want to get, is the five languages of appreciation in the workforce, because it's, I want you to go over it a little bit, maybe even step by step on the different languages so we could talk about them and give us an idea of each one.
Yeah. So they're the same in name as the five love languages. So people who are familiar with that hear that. But, you know, Dr. Chapman, you know, we can't talk about love in the workplace in this.
Especially nowadays.
So what's the equivalent? So we came up with the concept of appreciation and felt like that was, you know, what would work. So, but the five languages are words of affirmation, which, you know, it's pretty simple. They're words that are affirming. You're affirming the value of somebody. And a key thing that we found in the workplace is that we need to help people be really specific about the actions. It's easier to work it out in a family relationship or whatever in the five love languages, but for a variety of reasons, it's tougher at work. And so one of the things that we really encourage people at work with words is you have to be specific. We have, I don't know, 95,000 people in our newsletter list. And we do polls, and we did one and asked, what don't you like to hear? And one of the things they don't like is good job. Mm-hmm. And the reason is it's too vague. It doesn't take any time or mental effort. And it doesn't mean a whole lot. And so we really encourage people to use a person's name, say specifically what they're doing or have done that you really value and appreciate. And third, why it's important either to you, the organization, or your clientele. You may think they know that, but it's good to make that connection. So their name, specifics, and then the why. So that's words. And I'll tell you, you know, so we've had 280,000 mm-hmm. people take the inventory. So we've got a good database. So most people think that when we talk about appreciation, we're saying, talking about words that you're just saying something, which is true. But over half of the workforce don't value words as their primary language. So if you only use words, you're missing half of your team from the get-go, right? And so it is the largest group. It's 46%. But it's not everybody. Second language is quality time. Quality time in the workplace is interesting. It was the thing that made us go deeper on our inventory that not only identified the language, but also the actions that are important. Because for some people, especially in the old days, I'm a boomer, you know, there was a saying, people don't leave a job, they leave a manager, right? And that relationship was important. And there are people who really do value time with their supervisor, manager, to either give input or learn. But more and more younger employees want time with their peers. I mean, I tell leaders these days, just because you have a team member that has quality time as their language doesn't mean they want time with you. You may be wonderful, you may be great, but they want to hang out with their friends, go out after work and so forth. So quality time is 26% of the workforce. The next language is acts of service. And acts of service is not rescuing a low performing, you know, colleague. It's really those small things that help make their day or week go better. And probably the best example of that is when somebody's got a major project they're working on, it's time limited, they're just, you know, banging away on it, trying to get it done. What's something that you could do to help them so that, you know, they can either stay focused on it or whatever? So it could be answering the phone for them so they can stay focused on the project, or answering their emails, maybe a few daily life kinds of activities so they can stay focused on the bigger project. And that's 21% of the population. I had a CEO tell me, he said, you know, my language is get her done. He said, don't tell me stuff. Don't give me stuff. Just help me get things done. I know you're on my team. So, and these are the people that sometimes don't even really like words. I mean, they're sort of like, words are cheap. Don't tell me you care, you know, show me. So you got to be careful about trying to use words for everybody. Mm-hmm. Fourth language is tangible gifts. It's not bonuses, raises, big kinds of rewards that way. That's more between the employer and the employee. It's small things that are showing you're getting to know the other person. And that ties into sort of a key part about appreciation is, you know, most people know about employee recognition and employee recognition programs, and they're fine when they're designed right and implemented consistently, but that doesn't always happen. But employee recognition is about performance, right? You know, you want them to do something, set a goal, reach it, and that's good. But we really believe that appreciation is about the person, the value of the person, that people have value beyond just what they do and perform. We're not just work units, right? And so that's where this, you know, getting to know them as a person is important, because you can bring in their favorite kind of coffee, or you know, maybe if you order out lunch for the team, you make sure that you get the kind of pizza that they like and let them know that, you know, or it could be getting them, you know, a sports magazine, you know, and see how Tampa Bay is going to be at the bottom again this year. I'm a Chiefs fan, so it's a good time to be a Chiefs fan. You know, so it's just small things around their hobbies. Maybe they're going to plant a garden, or they're learning how to do something, that kind of thing. Just say, hey, I thought you might be interested in this. And then the last one is physical touch with people. Like, you know, when I talk to HR professionals, they say, you know, relax, you're not going to get sued. you know, it's about really in the workplace, it's just spontaneous celebration. It's, you know, a high five when you finish a project, a fist bump when you solve a problem, maybe a congratulatory handshake when you make a sale. And it differs regionally. I don't know. So Florida is a unique state and region, but you know, I lived in Atlanta. The Southeast is pretty touchy feely. Mm-hmm. I do side hugs and work in New York and New Jersey. And this is what physical touch at the work looks like there. Hey, you know, I mean, just nod and then you just sort of, you know, say, you know, hey, from a distance. So
yeah, but Dr. White, I got to cut you off there because the New Yorkers who move down to Florida all of a sudden become touchy-feely like us. Okay. We're from New Yorkers. We come down here. All of a sudden, we want to be like Southerners. You walk into Starbucks and people actually talk to you and ask you how you're doing in your day. And it's like, cool. You're talking to me? And it's an amazing shift, to be honest with you.
So it takes effort, Dr. White. Of course, you know that. And, you know, we're home and we have a relationship at home. We have kids. We're married. All of that takes effort and trying to figure out that relationship. And now you're asking us to do it at the workplace and it takes a lot. So tell me why it's worth it, because we need to know that. I want to talk everyone listening into knowing that this is worth it and it's going to change for you at work. Sure.
Well, the first thing I'll say is that the number one sort of response about why people say they can't do it or don't think it happens is because they're busy, right? Everybody's busy. Nobody needs no more work to do. And so as a psychologist, I'm supposed to know about behavior change, both for individuals and groups. And so we know that there are always barriers to change, and busyness is one of them. One of the cool things though we learned is that we're not asking people, I'm not going to create another to-do list for you. All right. Mm-hmm. Not doing that. But we found that we can help you do what you're already doing or almost doing and tweak it just a little bit so it's effective, because you don't need to compliment everybody. You don't need to go check in on everybody, help out. We want to help you identify the specific actions within a language that is important for each person. So you can just hit the target and it doesn't take much. And one of the cool things about the busyness part is that when team members feel valued, a lot of the things that eat up your time go away like this. When people don't feel valued, they're more chippy and irritable over stupid little things like where their parking spot is or how big their monitor is or whatever. When people feel valued, they chill about it. It's like, it's not a big deal. And so you have less conflicts, less kinds of just stupid meetings that just, you know, don't get you to get things done. But you know, a lot of times, and in fact, I had somebody, I did a thing on Friday and somebody said, you know, this is too touchy-feely for me. I said, I got it. It's sort of touchy-feely for me too. I mean, if that's the goal is not to make people feel good. If they do, that's great. The goal, it's sort of like oil in a machine. Appreciation, when team members feel valued and appreciated, the machine works well. There's less friction, there's less heat, there's less sparks, and it flows. And so we've got great research. Chapter 2 of my book's got 50 research citations that we show when people feel valued, increases productivity, it increases profitability, it decreases staff turnover, decreases on the site job accidents, decreases employee theft, all kinds of good things. And so it's about helping your organization function well and effectively so that things get done.
Dr. White, I'm going to use one of the five here for my wife. Affirmation, baby, that was a great question. All right. And her second one is quality time. So after the podcast,
well, I'll sit down with you for a few minutes. This is more of a personal, but I know everyone else is dealing with this. So I am home. We have six children. We homeschool and we all do, you know, so we're a little busy, but I also work with Gino once in a while. For instance, here, I help him with the podcast. I help him with editing and lighting and camera work. Now, when we are just the two of us or with the family, I love quality time. That is definitely my love language. But when we're working together, I do not like him bothering me.
Right.
So it's different. Yes.
Yes.
We can have. Okay.
And so, we've done research where we found that, because people say, okay, is my love language and personal relationships the same as my appreciation language at work? And we found out that about 2/3 of the time, about 67% of the time, your top love language is one of your top two work languages and vice versa. So it's not always a one for one. And because we don't really assess for physical touch, it's less than 1% of the population. And I didn't mention tangible gifts is 6%. So it's really small. But it switches depending on the setting and the relationship. And so you can't assume just because, and it's interesting that you change in the setting between the two of you depending whether it's work or home, which makes sense, right? I mean, I had a CFO tell me, she says, my language is quality time. I want you to stop by and check in and see how I'm doing. After 5 minutes, I'm booting you because I got too much to do, you know, so.
Well, I was just going to follow that up. I used to work in the restaurant. I was in the kitchen. She would come in with the kids at the most inopportune times when I'm sweating, I smell, I'm cleaning chickens, and she wants to hang out. And I'm like, I'm a little busy here.
And now so he maybe feels that pain.
Maybe that
because
just
now it's the opposite. Yes. He comes in the kitchen. I'm like trying to do two things at the same time. He's like, hey, how you doing? I'm like, listen, I just need my space. Get out of here.
So that's how it works.
Yes.
How do you find out what your appreciation language is and that of your coworker?
Yeah, great question. Because in our culture, and we do stuff internationally, but I mean, in the United States main culture, asking somebody, you know, if I want to show you appreciation, how should I do that? That's sort of a weird question. I mean, we just like, yeah, I don't know. And mainly you get, I don't know, tell me thanks. I mean, that's about what you get. So you don't get much. So that's why we developed this online assessment, and actually a code for taking it comes with each book. You can also just buy codes because not everybody wants to read a book. You can just buy codes for your team and have them take it. And then we actually have a group chart where you can share with one another what your languages and actions are. And again, it's important, not just the language, but the actions, because, you know, like one of the things we found is like 40% of employees do not want to go up in front of a group to be recognized. Right. So if you're doing, you know, public kind of stuff, you know, you're sort of playing with fire a little bit. And so some people just, you know, send me a note or whatever, but doesn't, or it's okay in front of my team, but not in front of the whole group or company.
Yeah, we have an employee, an amazing employee at Rand Property Management. His name is Brandon. He does not like going in front of the whole team. He does a great job, and I can definitely see that if you put him up there, it'll be counterproductive. You'll probably be damaging it. So that is a great tip. What I would tell everyone to do is, in the show notes, I wrote a book review on Dr. White's book. Click on it, go through it. Go to Amazon, buy the book. We did a podcast with Dr. Chapman as well. You should check out that podcast as well. The two books are amazing. Go do the online assessments. I mean, for a cup of coffee at Starbucks for 3 days, skip coffee today, tomorrow, and the next day, buy the book. It'll be more than worth the investment in it. And there's just so much information. And I think it's eye-opening. And it's not, I mean, it is as a male, 50 years old, Italian guy. It is a little touchy-feely sometimes, but that's how it is. And we're supposed to be in ourselves. And we want to be able to communicate, and we want to be able to be open with others and be able to grow and be able to listen to, you know, how other people receive it. And that's important, because sometimes it's always, you know, do unto others as you want done unto yourself. I don't think that's the golden rule. I think what you're, you know, discussing is so much more powerful.
Yeah, it is. I mean, most of us start out with our own language, and that's fine and it's normal. But the problem is, and I tell leaders, I say, you need how to learn how to lead people who are different than you. Otherwise, you've got a bunch of mini yous around following you around. And it's like, you know, you may be great, but you've got to be able to communicate to others. And so it's, you know, people ask me, they say, well, you know, especially my age, I say, well, nobody patted me on the back when I was growing up. I turned out fine. I don't know if you did or not, but you know, whether or not we should have to do this, I don't know. But if you're going to keep your people, we know that here's an interesting statistic. 79% of the people who leave jobs voluntarily cite a lack of appreciation as one of the key reasons that they're leaving. Most managers think people leave for more money. They may get more money, but that's not the reason they're leaving. Leaving a job is a very emotionally taxing kind of process, and you've got to sort of have an emotional driver. And if somebody feels like you don't give a rip about them, then they're out the door.
You just made an interesting revelation to me. My father passed away in 2007, and he was never the touchy-feely kind of, I love you, son, kind of thing. And now that you say that, it's just, I think back, and I guess I never really thought about it. His love language was different. That's not his love language was acts of service. Always went to work, never sick, never complained, did his thing. And I think we should all stop and think about that, especially if we have parents that are older. That's just the way that generation was, and they showed their appreciation and love maybe differently than we're taught to do nowadays. Yeah. I'm not saying there's any right or wrong, but pops, I mean, he was awesome. He just never, you know, he never was the kind of guy to say, hey, you know, love you and that kind of thing. But yeah. his actions spoke louder than his words. And that was his, I wish I had read this book 15 or 20 years ago, wish that it was around. Then I could have said to myself, wow, he does love me, but in his own way.
Well, going with that, is it different? Because like we talked about in the beginning, having a family business compared to having non-family members, is it a different dynamic as far as reading this book opposed to the five love languages? Are we supposed to smush them together? You know what I mean? It's a challenge when it comes to parents and children.
Yeah, it is. So let me, bring something in. You know, family businesses, it's tough to have a good family. It's tough to have a good business. It's virtually impossible to have a good family and business together, you know?
I mean, that's all our dream, right? It's like we have a great company. Kids, come work right. with us. Yeah.
But really, it's just like you said, I think it's more contextual. Because there's a great book, it's called Hats Off to You, too. And it talks about just when you're, like my brother was, he was the oldest and he worked directly with my dad. And they would, in a conversation, they would move from my dad talking from being the CEO to the general manager, which is a work relationship. He can tell him what to do, right? He owns it, he can tell, to dad, to an adult son. You don't tell adult kids what to do, right? And so you've got to figure out what hat you're wearing when you're communicating. And I think that's true in appreciation and the love languages, that, you know, you can, you know, give them a hug or, you know, whatever it might be as a family member, but in work, you know, you've got to figure out a different way to do it. And I think this actually provides an avenue to give positive messages within that, that's not, you know, laden with family stuff.
Dr. White, in the book you mentioned, they may not want to talk manager to manager, peer to peer. Can you discuss how important that is as well?
Yeah, well, great. Because one thing we know is that this is too much for a manager and a supervisor to sort of carry on their shoulders themselves. I mean, when we first started, we were sort of, you know, targeting them. But after time, a short time, people said, hey, I'm going to encourage my colleague. You know, and this one guy, she said, I'm trying, but it's not working. She's getting grumpier all the time. You know, and it's like, I need to know what encourages her. And so one of the key things that we found is that we need to teach team members how to encourage and show appreciation to one another, partly because they want it from one another, and partly so that it's not the full responsibility of the supervisor. And it really works well. It's so cool. I mean, you know, we have a mining company in South Dakota, Wyoming, Colorado that uses our stuff. And you think in like these tough guy, you know, cement truck drivers and, you know, jackhammer guys and all that. But they love it. And they asked for, we have these symbols for our languages, and they asked for little stickers to go on their hard hats, you know, to be able to show one another. So it works. It's pretty cool.
It's usually the simple things, right? It's usually the little simple things that make all the difference.
Dr. White, can you give me a couple of steps? I'm a company, mid-size, whatever size. How do I bring up the conversation as the leader? Let's say I'm with the Jake and Gino community and I want to start introducing this into my company. Where would I start? I mean, I know obviously I need to read the book. I need to get on your newsletter. I need to do the assessment.
How do you talk people into it?
Because it can be your idea and habits are hard to break for people. I mean, we're still using Q-W-E-R-T-Y as a keyboard. Back in 1850s, we have so many better ways of doing it, but changing the culture and changing it. How would you, you know, how do you start?
Well, first, let me just say that most of the time we go in the middle of an organization. It's rare that a CEO or owner sort of finds this and comes up. You could make inferences about it or whatever, but the reality is people who are leading other people frontline, they see the need for this and they feel it. And they like, man, we can't right now, maybe the economy is, it's gone. We can't raise wages and, you know, but we got to keep our people. So here's a tool. And so we start there. They read the book or they can go to our website. It's appreciationatwork.com. And it's a word at, not the at sign, appreciation at work. And we got videos, you know, if you don't want to read, we've got podcasts like this. And just get familiar with it. And then, you know, find one or two people. Don't try to, you know, change the whole thing. Just find one or two people that are sort of interested in it and trying it out amongst yourself. And people are going to notice and say, hey, would you guys be willing as a team to go through this? And so I grew up in the not-for-profit social service world as far as professionally, and they give a lot emotionally and personally. They don't have money for training, so I wanted to create low-cost training programs. And so we have an online train-the-trainer thing that somebody in your organization can take, and then they can run different groups through the process, you know, 5, 6, 10 people, whatever. And it's low cost. And it, the inventories start at $15 a person, you know, go up to 25 for a fuller one. It's not a lot of money. And just, I always say, start somewhere with someone. Right. Mm-hmm. I'll make a big plan and never get it going.
Yes. It, like you said, start with one person. I think that's really important.
I challenge all of the leaders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, visionaries that are listening to this right now to heed that advice. Don't let it fall on your team. Take the responsibility yourself. And I'll give myself an example. For over 20 years, I had one restaurant. And within 5 or 6 years, I had 1,500 apartments and 50 employees in my second part. And what changed? I mean, obviously, I got more wisdom, but I did this all throughout the recession. And for me, it was people, systems, and culture. It was the core values that we created, the mission statement, the ability to recognize that people are at the core of your business and how you treat them really well. So for me to have that epiphany, aha moment, I'm glad that I had it. I'm glad that I got out of that. Oh, it's all their fault and it's not my fault. That's what's going on. When there's lack of leadership in every facet of our country and every types of different organizations, you can point to the amazing organizations and say what kind of culture they have. You can pick any company out there. Look at Chick-fil-A. Amazing. Yeah. We want to become the Chick-fil-A of apartments. Why is that? I really think that they use the five languages of appreciation. I think intuitively, they've been doing it forever. Yeah. We've had Steve Robinson, the former CMO on our podcast on the Jake and Gino show. He's an amazing example of this. They value their people. So don't say that, oh, I'm too busy to do this. Find an employee who's a leader and then let them take the reins and take those steps that Dr. White just outlined.
Yeah. Dr. White, I have to ask you a question before my husband does. So we always
have to. That's her way of telling me to be quiet.
I do. If anyone's watching, I slowly push him over.
I thought you were getting touch with the physical touch. I'm like, I'm getting physical touch on this podcast. Yeah.
You have a whole chapter. You touched on it a little bit before, but I really want you to talk about it a little bit. You talk about the differences between recognition and appreciation. Oh,
good question.
And they're so different. And I want you to kind of talk about that a little bit more.
You know, when I came, so I'm a psychologist. I came in the side door kind of thing, and all these HR people are helping build recognition programs. And I'm talking to people and clients, and I finally talked to some of my friends. He said, you know, this recognition stuff isn't working. And they said, yeah, we know, but we don't know what to do. Because it's like public recognition and then some kind of reward. But it's not tied to much specific. And it was really sort of, I mean, most people just felt like it was not genuine, right? Mm-hmm. And so initially I was sort of anti-recognition. I think I've come around and see that both work. The recognition part, it works well. That is about specifics and it's implemented well. But appreciation, it doesn't have to be. Well, here's the deal. Recognition only touches about 10 to 15% of the top team members, right? Mm-hmm. So you got a big group of 50 to 60% of your employees that are good people, they're solid, but they don't hear anything. And if they don't hear anything, what's going to happen? They're going to leave. Mm-hmm. So we want to help you focus on how to show appreciation to them. And it's, you know, you have people that are either still learning how to do their job, you know, as well as you'd like, or people are just sort of tough to appreciate. They're a little bit, you know, rough around the edges. You can still do it because it's like, for me, I like to work with cheerful people more than grumpy people, right? But that doesn't show up on somebody's performance review, right? But I'm going to take a medium high person that's cheerful over a grumpy high performer all the time, you know? And so I can say, man, heck yeah, I just love your smile and you got a cool laugh and it just lights up the room. Is it about work? No, it's about her, right? Yeah. Or I can have it can even be outside of work and be, Dave, man, I am so impressed with how you're training for a half marathon, just the discipline that goes for it. You know, is it about work? No, but I'm showing I appreciate and value him. Or a single mom, you know, Maria, man, you are so committed to your kids and you just are there for them. You love them. Is it about work? No, but you're going to grab her heart because you're tying into what's important to her, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not always about performance. It's about the person. Yeah. And the other thing about it, it's not organizational. It's not just top down. Mm-hmm. It can be from the receptionist to the IT person, from, you know, I don't know, director of marketing to somebody in accounting, because it's person to person. It's not organization.
Love that.
Dr. White, my wife has hit on four on this show. This is a gift. She gave me water. Number two is the physical touch, which is really good. Act of
You're
service.
Doing awesome.
She's on the show. Acts of service. She's actually taking the time. Quality time. I'm just waiting for the kind word of affirmation. I'm waiting for her to tell me that I'm awesome.
Amazing.
All right. So see, we got all five in under 30 minutes, man. We're doing good here, girl.
But I'm not going to tell you you're doing a good job because as Dr. White said, that's not good enough. You're an amazing speaker. You're very thoughtful. You even came with notes. Impressed.
Yeah. I like that.
Let me say something about the book because I got to think you maybe have a number of people in your audience that aren't big book readers. And actually, we got a whole bunch of people in the population. Mm-hmm. Here's the way to approach it. First of all, it's an easy read. Secondly, you read the intro. And then you pick and choose chapters. It's not always things you have to read all the way through. So you read the intro, sort of maybe see what the value is, and then look at the different languages. So it's easy. And, you know, we got audiobooks and ebooks and all that kind of stuff. But don't let a book thing hang you up. It's easy stuff to apply. In fact, I had to get over that because it was like, this isn't rocket science, right?
Right.
As psychologists, we sort of emphasize the obvious. It's like, it's good to listen to people. Oh, wow. Thanks for sharing that. You know, so anyway. Yeah.
Coming from me, my husband has, we're in his office and he reads everything. We get an Amazon package pretty much every other day with his books, but I'm not. I'm actually only interested in things that I'm interested in. And your book is very interesting. So I encourage everyone out there to get it. My husband took a while to read The Five Love Languages because of the title. When we had Dr. Gary Chapman on, he told everyone how pigheaded he was, but it's an incredible, it changes your relationships. This will change your work environment for the better. And I just encourage everyone to take a look.
And I just want to reiterate one thing. You know, if I'm going to have Dr. White on the show, the least that I could do is buy the book, read the book, be prepared, because I respect his time and his effort. And I think that's one way we can appreciate others by being present, being aware, having fun, enjoying ourselves. And that's why my wife says I get a book a day. We do a lot of podcasts. So the least I could do is spend 3 or 4 hours in preparing. I think that's one of the ways that we can show appreciation for people on us. What is the future have and hold for you?
Oh, wow. So, you know, what's interesting is until COVID hit and we sort of rebooted, but we sold more books every year than the prior year for 7 or 8 years. And, you know, the average business book sells 3,000 copies and we're selling 3,000 to 4,000 a month now.
Yeah.
And so thankful for that. We have a follow-up book called The Vibrant Workplace that talks about the challenges and how to overcome them. I wound up doing research because people would come up and tell me how nasty their workplace was or what a church or boss was. Did work and research on toxic workplaces and have a book on that. And we just finished a book that's going to come out in January on resolving conflict at work. It's called Making Things Right at Work. And understanding conflict, where it comes from, how to keep it from exploding in your face and then dealing with it. So, but you know, the thing is, we're just trying to get the word out because for whatever reason, and it's just sort of God's blessing of, it seems to make sense. It works for people. We're doing work with PepsiCo Global. We're doing work with Caterpillar. We do work with ExxonMobil, whole bunch of hospitals, you know, school system, government agencies, all the branches of the military. And so it's practical and it helps make things go better. So yeah, just trying to get the word out to help people.
Can we get you back on in January to review that book? Yeah, I'd love to get you on for that book because that's another very important topic.
I would love that.
Well,
I would definitely love that. There is even a chapter in your book about virtual workplace.
Oh, yeah.
And that's big now.
Yeah. We have a remote version of our inventory for remote employees, because how do you, you know, do an act of service or spend quality time when you're in different, you know, locations. Sure. So we have that. We dropped a training kit for remote employees as well. And I guess, look, and I published research this last year, 3 different things, one with 200,000 people. And we found comparing pre-COVID, during COVID and all that kind of stuff and remote and on-site workers. The key thing about remote employees and hybrid employees is you have to be proactive to communicate appreciation, because you don't have those interactions where you're just walking through the hall and you walk past their office, you stick your head in, or you don't see them in the break room. They're sort of out of sight and out of mind. And if you don't proactively reach out to them, they're going to get lost, right? And we found that you need to encourage their colleagues, because it's not just supervisor, but it's peers. But a key part is to talk to them and communicate about their personal life to some degree, because remote communication at work is largely task driven, which is fine. It should be, right? I mean, going over the budget or project list or whatever. But you don't have the time, but 5 minutes before or afterwards to chat with people about, hey, you know, what do you think about, I don't know, the Devil Red, how they're doing, or, you know, how'd your kids do in soccer this weekend? Right. And so to have and intentionally have, and so one of the things we've encouraged people to do is text somebody, chat, you know, or email and say, hey, I'd like to catch up with you for 5 or 10 minutes when you have time. Because when they're working remotely, you don't know what's up. You don't want to interrupt them.
Right.
But you find out, call them up. It could be video or not. And just chat with them and find out what's going on. And for leaders, it's important not just ask questions, because then it feels sort of like an interrogation. Okay, here's your wife, you know, your kids, you got it. But share something personal. Say, hey, I got to go sailing this weekend. It was for fun. Or I saw my grandkids play soccer. And so that you have that personal connection, because that's the key for people. We did research on mental health levels of remote workers, and a key part is staying connected at a personal level.
Great.
That's
tip.
Awesome. You know, it doesn't matter. Everyone listening, if you're thinking, oh, my workplace is down, it's negative, be the person to change. Read the book, read this book that we're talking about, The 5 Languages of Appreciation at the Workplace, and change. You change. And people do, right? Is it true that once you do something, people do, it kind of gets contagious?
I just, I wrote a blog. This was posted yesterday, I think, and doing a video on neutralizing negativity. And one of the things we know about negative workplaces is the two best things you can do is not contribute to the negativity. So if you walk up and somebody's complaining, don't join in. Mm-hmm. Or if they're, you know, moaning about something, don't add to it. Just say, hey, I'll catch you all later. Secondly, say something positive. Yes. It doesn't have to be about that situation. Say, man, wasn't it a great weekend? The weather was wonderful. Or, you know, I'm so thankful for air conditioning, or whatever it might be, because a positive is like throwing water on a fire that's trying to get going. And so if you just don't contribute and turn it to the positive, you're going to start to have an influence on that.
Yes, I love that. It's so little and simple.
Where can the listeners get a hold of you, Dr. White? Where can they find out more about you?
Yeah, so our sort of leadership website is appreciationatwork.com. It's the main thing. And there's lots of resources there. And if you need to get a hold of us, there's email places to do that as well.
Okay. We just want to thank you for taking the time today to spend with us, because this is a really, really important topic going forward. Especially if you have a business and you have a family, you want to blend it too. Be the exception. Don't be the rule. You can be by reading the book, by having your core values. Really, you got to think about what your values are, your values-based decision-making. And you want to have an amazing workplace where you walk in and you don't hear the negativity. We're there to impact others' lives. That's what business is all about. We're there to help other people. And by reading this book and by utilizing the information here, it will help your life. So once again, we really appreciate you taking the time.
Awesome. Awesome information. Thank you so much for writing the book, because I know took a lot. Yeah, yeah. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Take care, Dr. White.
All right.